County's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, and it's a very good morning at 3 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 23rd of June, 2023. How are you doing? I hope you're all very well indeed, and hopefully we can enjoy your company now for the next 3 hours on the 9 till noon show, where we'll keep you informed, entertained, and hopefully platform your views and opinions as well. The lines are open for you right now to get involved in the conversation. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text, 086 60 25000. If you've got a view on anything we're talking about or want to raise your own conversations, you can also call us. Today we've got Donna Marie and Niamh taking those calls on 07491 25000, and if email is your thing, well, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And for those of you who it suits, you can watch this show today and every day. You can go to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, where you'll get to see the guests who we're speaking to, across our Facebook pages as well, Highland Radio News and Sport and Highland Hub. And you can also click watch live on our website. So no excuses, whether you watch, listen, whatever you might do. Okay, let's introduce our panel for this morning. And I can say it every week because it's true. It is another cracker. We'll say good morning first to John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
I'm grand, thanks.
Very, very good indeed. Damien Dowds, the editor of the Inishowen Independent. Hi, Damien.
How are you doing, Greg?
Great to have you on board, as always, of course. And Mary T. Sweeney, A2 rep in Donegal and campaigner as well. I think I'll stick that one in, if you don't mind. Mary T., good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all the listeners.
Right, great to have you with us. All right, as hundreds of RTE staff were told that the company was losing money hand over fist and that they would have to take a cut in their relatively modest salaries, RTE were cooking up a secret deal that would see Ryan Tubridy paid off the books to a tune of €345,000 over the last short number of years. That information was kept from those staff I talked of, the public who pay these wages, and the Oireachtas. Mr. Tubridy says it's a matter for RTE. Apparently, he didn't notice that he was being paid significantly more than he must have been aware was being publicly reported. He's taken today off. It's not clear if he's going to go to work next week. He said publicly in 2019 that he wouldn't be found wanting in taking a pay cut, but as it turns out, he really didn't take that pay cut at all. This news emerges as, during a cost-of-living crisis, RTE is seeking the public to pay more for a service that many don't even use. RTE rakes it in from PPV now through the GEA Go, of course, and many would feel it's reneging on its own commitment to openness and transparency. Right, so Mary T. Sweeney, first, your reaction to this story.
Oh dear, where do we start with RTE? Are you going to give the whole hour over to it for me? Because I could be given out for the hour about RTE. It's a dysfunctional organisation. Now we understand that the accountancy doesn't work either. And then when I had a quick look at to see what's been going on since they sold the land, I see that in the report they did in 2019, a year after they sold 9 acres for 107.5 million, they were paying 3 million per year in security fees to look after that. Who could write it? It's absolutely unbelievable. It seems that Ryan, Norton, Graham Norton, had been saying on air that Ryan Tubridy wasn't being paid enough. It would now appear that they must have somebody listened in a back office to Graham Norton and thought, we'll give Ryan a big backhander here. It's disgraceful. It's a disgraceful. And you mentioned the crisis, the economic crisis in Ireland at the moment. And there's a genuine crisis with people in their homes. And it's an insult to even ask people to pay more money. And maybe we should consider the defunding of RTE and let them realise what it's like to sustain and have to be responsible for their biased broadcasting that they present, because I think it is biased.
It's not just RTE this affects, though, because there was a recent report that showed there was more of a trust of the media in Ireland than there might be elsewhere. These types of stories don't only impact RTE, though. They arguably impact everyone.
Completely, completely. And to think that their biggest concern seems to be in how to resolve their pension crisis. Like, you know what I mean? There has to be accountability. And who will be held accountable? This is the history of dealing with a crisis in Ireland. It is collective accountability, so nobody has their head rolled. Nobody will be held responsible. And yet there will probably be an inquiry that will cost another couple of hundred thousand or maybe perhaps a million. When will the Irish people say, no, wait a minute, enough is enough?
We learnt this week.
We know the format.
Yeah, we learnt this week off the back of the Brandon report that no one will be held accountable for that because people have either retired or left their position. And is it a coincidence then, and I'm not conflating these two issues, is it a coincidence that Ryan Tubridy's just happened to step down as the host of the RTE Late Late Show and that Dee Forbes is also making way? I mean, I'm not saying all of those things are connected, but I think the public at this point might start wondering, well, are they? I mean, it all seems very convenient.
There's a bigger coincidence. Is it a coincidence that there's been a Donegal woman thrown under the helm at the very last minute in the last year that has uncovered all of this? And fair dues to her for uncovering it. We have to admire her for uncovering it. But we also must ask who all knew that she was going to be left with unravelling this. And I don't know the lady personally, but other than she's from Donegal. And it's a tremendous achievement to get to that level in Dublin, which has been very hostile to Donegal on several avenues. I would think continuously hostile, not alone on health and on services.
Yeah.
But to think that this lady, I would think that she has been created in this position within the last year. Right, everybody's gone. There's too many common denominators that would make me think this was well planned in advance. Somebody knew about it. And what accountants are responsible? Who signed the paperwork?
Well, I mean, obviously, management have to be involved in this. Anyway, I'll come back to you to see what happens next. And just for context, by the way, and for those who may not be aware, we have access to all of the newspapers here every morning. And this story is on the front of it and across numerous inside pages of the paper. So this is not something I'm individually amplifying. And I do understand there's a personality in here as well that a lot of people would have a strong positive feelings for as well. So there might be some confliction as to how people feel about this story. But how does Damien Dowds, the editor of the Inishowen Independent, feel about this story?
I only heard it on the radio this morning, and surprised, not surprised. I think the timing of it, Greg, as you mentioned, is interesting. It's probably more to do with the new chief executive of RTE coming in than it is to do with Ryan Tubridy probably stepping down from the Late Late Show. It just shows you that somehow RTE, who had to be badgered for years into revealing the salaries of their talent, as they call it, have for the last, since 2017, it looks like, been kind of cooking the books there. And they're saying that, so Tubridy is the top of, the top 10 or the top 20 highest paid earners in the station have their salaries reported. Tubridy is the top of that tree. Apparently, they're saying that none of the other top nine have anything different on theirs, but could you trust the word of it at this stage? So I think the breach of trust, like RT gets 160 quid off every household in the country that has a television in it. So it gets a lot of money from us citizens. They are able as well to get other income from the government. They obviously do a lot of advertising and are dominant probably in the television and the radio advertising sphere. So they get a lot of money coming directly from the public, some coming from the private sector. And they have to be accountable, and they do be accountable, and they are brought in and they regularly have to come before the Oireachtas. And it looks now like they've been misleading the public, the politicians and the rest. And it's going to be very hard to see how RTE can rebuild that trust. For years, they've been looking to increase the €160 license fee, and that will be entirely out the window now over the head of this. It looks like they've been giving Ryan Tubridy underdeclared his wages by $20,000 in 2017, $50,000 in both 2018 and 2019, and $56,250 in 2020, according to David McCullough on the RT News last night. Those are sums of money that, for a lot of people, that's their annual income.
Well, can I put it into context? Because a producer on the Late Late Show, for an example, the average wage is €32,000 per year. That rises up to the top scale, which is €55,000. Now, you have to have 12 years of service as a producer on the Late Late Show before you would achieve that. So the majority of people are earning 32 odd. As I say, in 2019, he said he would not be found wanting in taking a pay cut. He didn't take a pay cut as he must have known was actually being advertised out there. I would say some of the staff of the Late Late Show are feeling a little bit bitter this morning, hurt this morning with that news?
I'd say all across that organisation is there. Look, I've never really understood why the talent, as RT likes to call it, is paid at the rates that they're paid.
Well, they say that, you see, if they don't pay them, Today FM, News Talk, the BBC, I even heard Fox News being mentioned in relation to Pat Kenny, that they will come on and they will drag them out of the country and will lose that talent.
I'd say let them go and don't let the door close on the way behind them, because none of them are that bloody good that I've ever seen. That has really drawn me, and that makes me think that boy there is worth his $500,000. Mary T mentioned that. Look, it's a personal thing. I don't particularly watch the Late Late Show with Ryan Tubridy on. I'm actually looking forward to seeing how Paddy Keelty handles it. No, I have no problem particularly with Ryan Tubridy. I just don't like his presentation manner. I've never really liked it. So I don't take a look at him and think, geez, that boy there is worth $500,000. Graham Norton, you mentioned Mary T. I do occasionally watch his programme on BBC, and I will get a laugh out of it, like, you know, and I wonder, like, I don't know what he's paid over there, like, but there's entertainment value and there's what you call with him, like, so he, you know, I can look at that and go, geez, that boy there is pretty good, he's at the top of his game. I don't look at too many people in RT, and I've never looked at too many people in RT that are that way. So they've paid the talent, as they call it, over the top for donkey's years. And the salary that Ryan Tubridy's on today of 340, or maybe it's 400, whatever the number is,
because we can't trust
him. It used to be an awful lot higher 20 years ago, because they were paying rings around them. And it never made sense. It didn't make sense then, it doesn't make sense now. And for the entire organization, which, look, I'm not one of those people. I don't actually begrudge the license fee. I think it's important that we have an RTE. I think it's important that we have a national broadcaster. I think it's important that it's properly funded, so that, because we live in, you know, between Britain on the one side and America on the other side, two very culturally powerful countries that can dictate a lot of what's talked about and spoken about in the English-speaking world. I think it's important that we have a distinct Irish station that's able to give an Irish view. And I don't always agree with it, naturally, but I do think it's important. But I think that they have, for a long time, they have overpaid the top stars, and they have really, really, really destroyed a lot of trust with us. And it's the new chief executive that's coming in. I think the timing is more to get the bad news out of the way in the dying days of the outgoing chief executive. And then when the new chief executive comes in, it's something that he has to deal with as a historical matter, and, you know, his hands aren't dirty on it because it wasn't happening on his watch. So it does look, to me, you know, it looks like that.
Stage managed, you know, to some extent. Ones that
they're trying to hold people, you know, they're always, and rightly, you know, as best as they can, they try to hold people accountable. They try to hold politicians, public figures, whatever else accountable. And, you know, this here now is terribly undermining for faith in RT, but also faith just in,
but you say
in
that,
broadcast media and journalism.
You say that. I happened to listen to the News at One yesterday, and there was strong questioning, in fairness, from the presenter of a number of guests, but there was a pre-record from Micheál Martin for 2 minutes that went completely unchallenged. I'm not really sure that's public service broadcasting, but that's a personal opinion. I listen to some RTE radio, by the way. I'm not per se anti-RT. I just think it's the money's ridiculous. John McAteer, what do you think?
Surprised, I suppose, more than anything else, because, you know, what were they hiding and why were they doing it? Ryan Tubridy is on a huge salary, regardless. Uniquely different the way that contracts are agreed between his agents and all the Stars agents and the commercial end of RT. It's the same in most broadcasters. But why would they want to hide 345,000? And that's beside the point, because, I mean, if you were getting another 345,000 into your account over 6 years, Greg, you'd probably be asking questions of somebody. When do I have to start paying this back? It's a big mistake. It would seem that this initial idea came through one of the commercial sponsors, that the X amount of that was directed to Tubridy's account, and then RTE wrote an invoice for it. It is highly unusual. There isn't an explanation for this, but it raises fundamental questions about the whole methodology that is being used.
But they underwrote, they guaranteed it.
They
guaranteed that. And then when that commercial partnership wasn't renewed, RTE paid.
I think that only lasts excess for 1 year, actually. But 345,000 out of RTE and then literally strapped for cash. It just doesn't add up. But it'll also raise questions and we'll have our ears perked to see what exactly are they paying Patrick Keighley. Is it going to be a lot more than that? Because Patrick Keighley has been a very highly paid star for a very, very long time. And I'm sure he's not coming to RTE just for the sake of being on Irish television.
Well, I'm not so sure. I saw him on Celebrity Catchphrase on Challenge TV last week. I'm not sure.
Come in the depths, Greg. Come in the depths.
I don't mean it badly, but he was on Celebrity Catchphrase.
Celebrity Catchphrase.
On Challenge TV.
He's a stand-up comedian. He has a good grasp of current affairs. I'm not too sure how the format of the Late Late Show will fit into him. I'm not too sure that they will change it drastically. I think they will have to. They should forget about it altogether. No. The Ryan Turbury thing beggars a lot of questions, a lot of practices going on inside RTE that are inexplicable. I'm not sure if they're right or wrong. It would seem that there were to be 15 cuts for 15% cuts for all top earners in RTE. That hasn't happened in this particular case. The cut was more like maybe 5 or 6%. And I suppose, as Mary T says there, there'll be an inquiry, there'll be an investigation.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the consequences of this, because what will happen, there'll be a ton of noise over the next while. Sinn Féin are going to be, and the other opposition TV TDs are going to be out in the media. They already have been. The government will sort of have a tough line to walk, and we'll hear stuff from RTE and inquiries and all. But let's talk about what this actually means and what the consequences of it might be. Not Ryan Tubridy as an individual, okay? Because, you know, he did nothing wrong as such, right? So in terms of what does this mean, RTE, Damien said, I think it was Damien, or was it Mary T? Damien said they can forget about increasing the licence fee now. That's not going to wash with anyone at this point. What is the potential reputational damage to RTE here, maybe the media more generally speaking?
I would say it's quite serious, actually, because, you know, people will be looking with disbelief that somebody can be paid $345,000 and nobody sort of realises it until some accountant picked it up in an audit. It just does not quite add up. And I'm sure that every last accountant in RTE over the last 6 or 7 years will be now trawled by Grant Thornton to see if there are any other practices of a similar nature there. It is it's very bad PR for the company. They've mismanaged it all day yesterday because nobody really had any questions to answer. The Director General was on RTE with David McCullough yesterday evening getting a bit of a roasting, but she's a mild, modest woman from Dunfanaghy, and she just really did not know anything about it because it's outside of their remit entirely. If you're the Director General of a huge organisation like RTE, I suppose you'll have to ask the question: what is the role of that organisation when their Director General was not aware of it? Where exactly do they fit in, and who exactly calls the shots insofar as paying out money is concerned? It's a whole mess, and I would say that insofar as the public is concerned, there's more and more people just not watching RTE, and I'm one of them. I watch news and current affairs, and that's about it, because I find it bland. I find their news programmes very flat, and they don't challenge anybody. You've kept saying that, Greg, for the last number of years. You know, I suppose the government is paying a lot of income through advertising and all that. And do you bite the hand that feeds you kind of thing?
I think there's part of it too is that, though, because they have access to a minister a morning, that they're afraid to jeopardise that with challenging questions. You know, I mean, you've seen how Pascal Donoghue slapped a few presenters down, and it's been taken on the chin with apologies.
But you see, that is all wrong. Can you imagine Brian Farrell, people like that in his day? I mean, they wouldn't even dare do that because they would take them to pieces. But it's a nice, cosy kind of a 10 or 11 minute gap to fill. You have a minister a morning. It'd be nice if they didn't have a minister most mornings, because we're not learning anything from them, only the PR guff that they keep churning out at us that doesn't make any sense. But it's all this consensus now that there's no room at all to sort of say, no, just hold on here a minute, I don't think you're right there. Mm. That's not happening in RTE anymore. And they're all the poorer for that, because news and current affairs is not meant to service the politicians. It's meant to serve us and in our knowledge and in their, and their, I think it's their remit to provide that information.
Yeah, but politicians feel that if they don't like the line of questioning, they'll just not bother taking those questions any longer.
Well, then they shouldn't have them on. I mean, yeah, it's as simple as that there.
Well, that's, I don't disagree.
It's basically promoting the image of that politician and that party. And like, it's all very, very slick. It's all PR exercises.
Right.
These days, and there's just no room to dissent.
I can't believe how quickly time's going already. Damien, I want to ask you, and then I'll go back to Mary T. What are the consequences of this? You know, obviously, there's going to be a ton of coverage over the next while. It is definitely going to run into next week. But what do you think the consequences are for this in terms of maybe RT, how it's funded, how it pays its stars?
Well, I think there could very well be, in this early days yet, but there could very well be consequences for Ryan Tuberty as well with staying with the station. You know, and while maybe no fault of his, I mean, his bank account's open with RT, you want to transfer, and RT can do the same for me, by the way, if they want to transfer an extra 20 or 50,000 quid and tell nobody about it, they're very welcome to do so. But I'd say he's quite damaged for his radio programme as well. So there could be some consequences for him in that. Maybe he'll be able to, you know, maybe News Talk or Today FM or one of the British stations or American stations will find that his talent is such that they have to come and swoop in and take him away from us all. But for RT, yeah, there's serious damage to them, Nick. And as I say, this they've been talking about hemorrhaging money for years. Mary T mentioned that they sold off ground down at Montrose, that they were paying an awful lot of money, which I wasn't aware of, for their security on it. They are going to have to tighten belts. And the problem is that the tightening the belts will likely be in the loss of, because they're not going to get extra money from the state now. From they're not going to get extra money from the government. They're not going to get extra money in terms of the license fee. So they are going to have to tighten things, and they're probably going to end up losing some of those more junior staff, because the talent, for whatever reason, will continue to get their 300, 400, 500,000.
Yeah, and they do have unions to deal with and internal rumblings, because it is a big organisation, and I think an awful lot of the anger is actually coming from within. Mary T. Sweeney, back to you finally before we take a break. What do you think the consequences of this might actually be? Not what you hope now, but what do you think it might be?
I would think the consequences of this would possibly be that we are naive in thinking that we have a political establishment who are responsible for holding them to account, because we own RTE, and who in our political establishment is going to go up against them? I think we would be naive to think that we have politicians in government that are going to hold them accountable for this to the true extent of what they should be held, and to get a further investigation off their accounts, including the security plus whatever that was spent post-sale of that land at Montrose that has been reported in the papers. And they're looking to sell more land currently to fund pension schemes. I think they might need to realise, the way many's a family paying their mortgages, that they are under threat of having no pension. There should be no grand entitlement to enormous pensions. And just in relation to the housing crisis in Dublin, we have been inundated with imagery about the housing crisis in Dublin. But yet, it's at pain's length that the people from Donegal have to bring up the MICA campaign, and no worry about the campaign in Donegal. Mm. You know, they are totally Dublin central. And I would consider it more devious that it's not actually an independent body, but it's a political wing of certain politicians in Ireland.
Just
I think it's too political.
Sorry, I beg your pardon, Mary T. I thought you were finished. It needs to be what? Sorry, finish what you were
it
going to say.
It needs to be deconstructed in its present format.
Okay, my apologies there, Mary T.
Because it's a political entity, and it shouldn't be political. And I can personally respond to looking at the figures for, say, the abortion referendum came out yesterday, 8,150 babies. When they cover the marches, and the march is on the 1st of July, please book your buses in Donegal. Please support these unborn babies and support mothers get money to keep their babies. But they never gave it true and honest reporting. It was just blatantly a lack of a real democratic accounting and publicity about the crowds of people that attend those marches. Okay. And the MICA march, it was a real effort to get them to give accurate figures. But yet, if it was a football match or something else, there's no problem. So it's a political entity and it needs to be depoliticised immediately.
We'll be back with more from our guests after these. Mary T, before the break, mentioned the defective concrete protest that took place in Dublin. Today's kind of an important day, I think, because it's 1 year on since the truncated, the scrutiny of the defective concrete redress scheme. It was the long process was avoided because we were told at that time, like we were told before the first scheme, that if you don't accept this, it could be years before you get a scheme. We were told at the time that there can't be pre-legislative scrutiny in its full form because it would delay this really, really important scheme. Well, we're 365 days on from the shortened version of scrutiny of spending billions upon billions upon billions of taxpayers' money. And yet here we are, Damien, with no enhanced, in inverted commas, redress scheme. The public once again sold a pup, I think.
It'll be out in 2 weeks, Greg. It's been 2 weeks. We've been told it'll be.
I feel like I'm the back of your. Weeks. I feel like I'm in the back of your car on the way to Dublin Airport. Are we there yet, Dad?
It's nearly that. I think we've been told it'll be there in a fortnight since about Christmas time. The pace at which it has moved has obviously been appalling. On that pre-legislative scrutiny thing, now you know there's no. I wouldn't just. So there was no pre-legislative scrutiny, really, of the bill, and it does take a long period of time if it is to be done. Like, you know, take, in the way that the Araptus works, it would take several months for that to be done. There would be no guarantee that a full pre-legislative scrutiny had been gone through, that the Department of Housing's officials wouldn't be doing exactly what they're doing now, which is taking their fine time. And that's what they've been doing since it's almost a year. It'll be July. Will be 12 months since the bill was enacted. And they'll be sitting in the Dáil, sitting in the Department of Housing, congratulating themselves at doing something at such speed by their standards. But for the standards of people who have to live in the Mica houses, people who've already engaged with the scheme on the 60-40 scheme, thinking that the bigger, more enhanced scheme is just around the corner, those people must be going off their heads. I mean, they will have borrowings right, left and centre, waiting and praying like everybody else that the enhanced scheme would open so that they would get a bigger grant paid down to them. Like, it's and there is no urgency, and there hasn't been urgency. And there hasn't been urgency since this was first discovered in about 2012, 2013, when people like Eileen Doherty and Anne Owens and them got together, and when this was all ignored, and they fought like tigers to bring it onto the agenda. It's been one of the greatest achievements probably in Donegal political history, how the Mica group got together and got something done. But the pace at which the state moves on this here is absolutely appalling.
And let's not forget, it's about 6 months now, and I'm sorry, if I feel like I'm bashing RTE, maybe I am, I don't know. But it's about 6 months now. It's about 6 months now since the housing minister was sitting in front of an RTE journalist, and it was said to him, and he nodded as it was said to him, "Well, you've resolved the issues in Donegal now. What about on to the next subject?" And nodded the head and says, "Yes, indeed, I have." So that's the kind of accountability that these ministers, when they make themselves available for questioning on certain platforms, that's the kind of questions they get. Mary T, you mentioned the defective concrete. So, as I say, a year on from that joke of pre-legislative scrutiny for a scheme that is going to burden the taxpayer to the tune of billions upon billions upon billions, completely irresponsible not to scrutinise that fully, I would imagine. But anyway, what's your view?
I was turning on to connect into the show today, and I heard the tail end of the Highland Radio News, and I would really hope that I heard it wrong. But I believe it was the minister used the expression in relation to the Mica scheme, and please correct me if I picked it up wrong, did he say more palpable? Did he really use that language?
Yeah, well, I'll check.
Does he know what the word palpable means? Mm. Is it that he's trying to make something? How dare he? How dare he? And thinking about the families, and see the consecutive politicians that have sat at these meetings that I attended from the very beginning. And they sat, and it's still happening today. There are still houses being sold. And I don't blame the people trying to sell their homes because they know they have Mica. How would you react? You panic. You have to react. And they're trying to sell homes that we know have Mica to an unsuspecting buyer. It is criminal, and not by the people, by the government, to have created this entity. this nightmare for families, that mental health on not just the parents, the children, the whole community. The whole community has been damaged by successive politicians, each one of them, whoever sat on those meetings and continued to sit and make what I consider to be false promises. And then you see what's happening in the banks with people that have become bankrupt for millions of pounds, being writ off for like 80, was it 80,000 this week? Somebody wrote off their debt. 80, what is going on? We need a bit of French blood. I'm going to Paris and I'm going to bring over and get a transfusion of French blood to give us a bit of fire back in. We've lost a lot of our leaders in Ireland.
There's a bit of a dictatorship emerging in France as well too, though. But I do take your point. And John, this enhanced scheme, it might be good news to a small group of people, but still the scheme will, whenever it is announced, will exclude farm buildings, agricultural buildings, commercial premises, second homes, holiday homes, community centres, many within a stone's throw of where you're sitting right now. But as I say, your reaction to the fact that we were told we have to avoid plea legislative scrutiny to get this over the line, and here we are a year on from the truncated version of that, which was a nothing really. In fact, some of the quotes from it are still quite shocking and startling when you reflect on what was said during that process. But anyway, families still feel the no further on, John.
You can't blame them. The reality here is that it's way over 2 years ago since the first went to Dublin, down to the convention centre 2 years ago, and then they went, the huge group went in October, massive demonstrations in Dublin. I don't know what more the Mica Action Group can do. They must be exhausted in disbelief and in shock that they're dealing with a cabinet where if there was prizes for political one bagging, there would be top competition to see who would win it. If this was in Dublin, this would never be happening. It just would have been resolved. It is $2.5 billion. It's not a lot of money under any circumstances, given the kind of money. I mean, budget day, the government will have at least $15 billion to give away over and above what's needed to run the country. Why Donegal has been left waiting since 2016, when this was first exposed on national television on the 30th of May of that year, and we've not learned anything much new that wasn't there on that night. It was very well presented, it was very well researched and put together. Why it's moving at a snail's pace, often it's moving backwards, and it's never going forward. And it's got to the point where we no longer believe anything we hear from a politician.
Is this tied in maybe to sort of the national situation in terms of them trying to suppress inflation and what have you? You know what I mean? There are analysts who are afraid that too much capital investment might heat up the economy to too much of an extent, right? So if you've got your housing for all scheme and then you throw in potentially an extra 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 houses on this, are civil servants working behind the scenes and saying, hold on, we can't actually do this. We can do it, but if we do it, it could have a ripple effect across other areas of the economy. Like, I would like that being dug into a little bit more here, because as I say, they're trying to keep the foot in people's neck in terms of taking money out of the economy with interest rate rises and also tax increases to further push people into hardship to lower inflation, and also not pulling the trigger on capital investment that they can afford for fear of overheating the economy as well. Is it all intertwined, interlinked? I would just like some truth. Tell us what it is.
I suppose it is, but you see, the go-to position of politicians is always to blame the civil servants. It's the handy, convenient cushion. I suppose the public are subservient into believing that, because what else do you do? We do elect the politicians to make sure that that doesn't happen, to make sure that the will of the people is put forward to the permanent government, and that those top civil servants react accordingly.
The civil service have their fingers in every pie, though, John. It's only really come to my mind over the last few months that how on such on a macro level how they control a narrative at certain things and what how, like my eyes have been opened and I'm flabbergasted at the extent of the control.
The reality is here that over the last 25 years, they have gradually been allowed to take that control away from the political process. I mean, why do we have a cabinet, representing the people at the highest possible level? they should be dictating to the civil service that this is the way it has to be done and this is how it must be done, and you have 6 months to come up with a brief on it. This is not happening at all. The top civil service are just dictating the pace on this here. But, you know, you have to ask more serious questions about why a county like Donegal has been left with such a disaster of Mica House infection down the years. It's gone on maybe 20 years. And it's all down to defective blocks, and that's the long and the short of the story. It shouldn't be a big job to resolve that and to put systems and methodologies in place to ensure, Damien, that people have their homes restored.
Yeah, Damien, this is nothing that has to be front-loaded. This is a multi-year, obviously multi-billion. That being said, there's job creation, there's employment, there's a clawback in VAT. There is the doing the right thing element. I mean, everything points to the fact that this is a no-brainer. So that is why I'm struggling to guess the motivation as to why you would deny these families justice, because all reasonable ways of thinking about this would suggest that you just say, oh my word, refusing downsizing, for an example. I mean, there's no logic to that unless you're trying to frustrate something or delay something or defer something or to limit access to it, Damien.
I think there's just awful inertia within the Department of Housing, and they're not able to get their head around it. They resent that their first little pet scheme that they were forced into back in 2020 didn't really get to see the light of day before it had to be overturned. So they resent that, and they have continued to do it. The extent of this, Greg, isn't fully and yet appreciated. This $2.5 billion price tag, it will be, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, it will be 10 times that by the time it's finished.
I would love a figure on the amount of people that are waiting for €600 or €700 testing, because this thing is going to explode.
And that's only talking about private houses, Greg. I mean, the quarry at the centre of the supply blocks that would build in the region, I was told by a source, of 50,000 homes. So the number that the government has worked off comes from they had a working group looking into defective blocks back by 2016, 2018, and they did a desktop analysis of how many many social houses had mica, and they tried to calculate based on that how many of those had mica, how many plan permissions had been granted in the period. So it's a desktop calculation that estimates there's about 5,000 affected homes. Mm. And that is not to talk about all the rest, the farm buildings, the commercial buildings, the schools and so on. The full extent of this is not yet appreciated.
Yeah, I don't know a ton of people.
And it will be a multi-year, and it will be. It is a 20, 30-year job to undo the damage that has been done to the housing stock, to the premises, all the building that was done in our county for the guts of 25 or 30 years has a massive question mark over it all. And most people will have to assume that, and people need to understand this, listen to the radio today, just because your house isn't exhibiting the worst signs of the mica that you have seen, it does not mean that you are guaranteed to be away from it. Any home that was built in the last 20 to 25, maybe even 30 years, you'd really be best assuming that you have mica unless you can prove otherwise through getting the test done. Mm. And that, I'm afraid, is the unpalatable truth about it. This really what has been discovered so far, and the homes that are in the worst state, is only the tip of an unimaginably large iceberg.
Yeah, indeed. And there's people getting tests done that don't have enough mica for the scheme, but they have enough mica whereby the house, no one is going to buy it. I know 4 or 5 people personally that strongly suspect they have mica, but they're not officially counted because they can't afford the €6,000 or €7,000. And as soon as this new scheme is announced, they're going to be on the list, I suspect. Mary T.
One of the things that I have said from the start, I'm very sceptical about this RZLT tax. And I have sent multiple articles forward on this from the start. The residential zoned land tax. There's two strains to this. I'm concerned, are they going to try and make the farming community fund the rebuilding of the counties that have mica? Are the Donegal, the percentage, we can't even get proper percentage figures how much land. They've included houses on the RZLD maps that should never have been on it. Instead of showing clean, clear maps of what land has been allocated to have to pay this residential zoned land tax, it's absolutely criminal what they're at, in my opinion. And they think that the farming community or the people that have one or two acres, who are often have struggled greatly to retain those couple of acres, you know, are they going to be funding this, or where's that money going to go? You know, where's the accountability in this government?
Okay.
We are really letting them walk away scot-free here.
All right, thanks, Mary T. I have to take a break. Back in about 3.5 minutes. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. We're in the company of Mary T. Sweeney, AIN2 rep in Donegal, community campaigner as well, Damien Dowds, editor of the Inishowen Independent, John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. We learned last evening of the very sad death of five explorers above the Titan submersible, which imploded earlier in the week as it descended to the wreck of the Titanic. It followed days of wall-to-wall coverage across Irish media and worldwide media. It was a story that certainly did grip the headlines. By contrast, the news that 750 refugees and migrants are feared dead after their overloaded vessel sank off the western coast of Greece received scant coverage by comparison. And to be honest, I struggled to find any coverage after at least 35 people drowned after an inflatable boat carrying up to 60 migrants and refugees sank while en route to the Canary Islands on Wednesday morning. John McAteer, why? I mean, any loss of life is tragic, and this is no disrespect to the five people that died above the Titan and their families. But why is there such a variance, do you think, of coverage in stories like this?
I suppose we're losing refugees by the tens of thousands over the last 20, 30 years, and it has been pushed to the very back of the news agenda. Media are not out there to cover most of those tragedies. The last big one for 750 people at least lost their lives was well covered up to a point, because first of all, nobody knows how many lives were lost. Secondly, nobody knows how many were on board that. And thirdly, nobody knows were there any real efforts there to try and rescue those people, and to what extent it succeeded or failed. That's one thing. It's out of sight. It's out
is
of
there
mind.
A role? Is the role in the media, though, to scrutinise exactly the questions you've asked, to a point whereby governments, agencies are to descend on the area like they have at the scene of the Titan disaster, or the Titan, this is a disaster, of course. You know, where is the role in the media of this? I mean, we can't say, well, we didn't have anyone there. Should we not be shaming the agencies into...
The role in the media would be to sort of query the those responsible. There are agencies responsible. It's a criminal act, first of all. These poor people, unfortunately, they're in that category of having nothing, and their only hope is to escape to a better life and risk their lives in doing so, and too many of them are getting drowned. And there's no easy answers to that, because as an entity, the EU and the various countries that refugees are heading for across very dangerous waters, there's no cohesive policy for dealing with them there. I mean, why should they be let drown? It's an absolute criminal act. The people who are trafficking them from wherever they're getting the money, I don't know. There's huge money being made out of this, and massive amounts of money are being paid by those unfortunate people to try and get to a better life. But they should not be turned away, and that should be highlighted in every headline in the media. Now, we have a good record in how we handle the refugees, but most of the refugees are not coming here. They're coming to France, they're coming to the UK, they're coming elsewhere in Europe. And it's just an incredible, incredible tragedy that so many people... It shows the state of the whole world order at the moment, that... Everybody has to leave so many countries. There was never more conflict. There was never more failure in trying to sort of, in some way, try and handle the safety of the refugees first and foremost and get them ashore.
Yeah,
And then look at how they're going to care for them beyond that.
And maybe we don't want to have that conversation out in front. Maybe that's why the stories aren't covered like they should be, some would feel. Mary T, just to the initial question, you know, why are we seeing such blanket coverage of this Titan submersive tragedy, and yet the at least 750 refugees, that story fell off the news cycle as 100 children remain in the hold of that boat. underground or undersea, sorry. And as I say, a further 16 migrants dead off the Canary Islands. Barely, as I say, I found one American report on it this morning as I tried to do a little research on it. I mean, are we as the public responsible? Because really, if the truth be told, and I said yesterday, if there's two stacks of 100 papers, on the left, it's the submersive story. On the right, it's the refugee story. Will the papers on the left will sell out far quicker than the ones on the right, perhaps?
I think. Well, I must say out front that I do in the party and supports a sustainable migration policy, and as a humanitarian, we've been phenomenal in Ireland to reach out. But I think that the reality to answer your question, I think it would be unfair to answer it properly within 10 minutes there. It's going to be very difficult. And I would love proper time to answer this question because there are so many different strands to this question. And we must ask, and nobody better than the editor of the newspapers, and I don't be disrespectful to the two editors present, but in the national sense, in the national framework of media control and TV and journalism, that tragedy sells, it appears, unless it becomes too repetitive. Hard-hitting, but true.
All right, what do you think, Damien? I'll come back to you, Mary T, but just like, you know, as an editor, because we only have about 3 minutes left, and I'll give the last minute to Mary T. I just think it's societal. I think it's just a condition. I think, you know, even in this country, God forbid, if someone dies in a fishing tragedy, it will receive far more coverage than someone who might die in a road traffic collision. I don't know what the story is there, but Damien, what's your insight?
Well, I suppose I'm just looking here. I've got the Twitter trending page open at the moment, Greg, and there's 395,000 tweets in Ireland trending over the Ocean Gate, which is the name of the company that sent that down. And even Ryan Tuberty, which is the big thing really for a lot of us today, only has 4,300 tweets on it. So the public at large are very interested in that story that came from the Titanic.
Yeah.
For cultural reasons, the Titanic has this cultural hold on people. And obviously, the contrast with the people that are in that submersible in comparison to the people that are fleeing Africa and trying to come to Europe, those people we have seen their photographs of the people that have gone down in that submersible. We've heard little bits about them. We are able to put faces to other Europeans. They're British, they're American, and they're French. Whereas the hundreds, the countless thousands that are fleeing Africa by boat, we can't put a face to. We can't fully relate to. So I think that's probably why the story gets so much attention. And it's one of these, it was a search and rescue for such a long time, and people think about it.
And it would be, a film would be made of that, if the truth be told, especially if they were found.
It's a common thing. This search to try and see if some people against the odds can survive there. It's a kind of a cultural thing that we have in the West here, and unfortunately for those, and it's all of humanity. I suppose our own humanity is a wee bit desensitized to so many thousands of drowning deaths in the Mediterranean as people are fleeing lives.
I suppose we saw ourselves, our reaction as a nation to that image of the young boy in this red T-shirt perishing, the Syrian boy on the beach.
That's right.
4,000 people offered spare rooms to Syrians, and within 6 months, they had all been pretty much withdrawn. Mary T, do you want the last 30 seconds, or shall we say goodbye?
No, I would take the last 30 seconds. And I would also want to say that the reality is that there's 250,000 children missing across Europe. That's the figures say one child every 2 minutes has been trafficked. And we're not hearing enough about that case. But what we have to do is we do have to have a very strong, firm hand with the people, the criminals who are running this and making it appear lucrative for people to put 5,000 into their hands to get on a boat. And this is where we're failing miserably. We need to look at the logistics and the legalities. And in Europe, they had the first conference in this last year where the judiciaries are coming together. And until we come down hard, we need to do that hand in hand with increasing and improving the quality of conditions in their home countries to make it less lucrative to appear to gather up between 2,000 and 7,000, and some cases 30,000 to get on a boat or a plane to become a migrant, because some of the real migrants are left behind.
Mary T. Sweeney, Ain't Too Rep. Thanks so much for your time. Have a lovely weekend. Take care of yourself.
Well,
Thank you. Good to have you with us. Damien Dowds, as always, great to have you on the show. Have a lovely weekend yourself. Last but not least, of course, John McAteer. Thank you, and we'll see you again really soon, I hope.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye, John. Take care.
Good morning.
Okay. Good morning to you. Back with more on the 9 till noon show.